you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Why, good morning. So good to have you here. Hope you had a great weekend. This is Air Talk. Larry Mantle is on vacation all of this week. I'm Kyle Stokes, here to keep his chair warm and keep you company on this Monday morning. Lots to get to. Later in this hour, we want to open the phones to memorialize the businesses and the public spaces that closed permanently during the pandemic that won't reopen and that your community is going to miss most. These are neighborhood coffee shops and bookstores, restaurants, museums, theaters, and bars. We will take your calls next, and you can leave a comment right now on the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. We also are going to take the 11 o'clock hour to hear directly from teachers. We want to know what worked and what didn't about distance learning over the last year, which was a crazy one in California schools, to say the least. I say that as an education reporter with some authority, and of course, teachers, parents, students with more authority to say so. We want to hear from you in our next hour. But we will start our show today with an update on the latest COVID-19 news with our medical expert, Dr. Kimberly Schreiner, an infectious disease specialist at Huntington Hospital in Pasadena. Dr. Schreiner, thanks so much for being back.
Thank you, Kyle.
No, and to our listeners, if you have questions about COVID-19 or are looking for the advice of a medical expert, you can give us a call, of course, at 866-893-KPCC. That's 866-893-5722 or the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. Dr. Schreiner, I would love to start with this morning's Novavax news. The vaccine maker announced results of a clinical trial into its new inoculation. The results were really good. The two-shot vaccine performed basically about as well as the Pfizer and the Moderna inoculations. There were also some encouraging results against the variants. At least that's what the headlines say. What stood out to you about this announcement?
Well, I think it just speaks to the innovation that's going on in the world of vaccines. This is a very, very good thing that has come out of a terrible pandemic, in that science has taken a very large leap forward in terms of vaccine platforms that are much more effective and safer than some that we've used in the past, sort of the live attenuated platforms and the adenovirus vector vaccines, which we still use. But Novavax is a subunit vaccine, similar in some respects to the hepatitis B vaccine. That's the same format. It's obviously a different vaccine for a different virus. And it's been looking very promising. Now we're beginning to get sort of proof of the pudding, if you will, that a trial done here in the United States and in Mexico looked very good. And you're absolutely right, Kyle. 90% effectiveness and probably even higher than that in preventing severe disease and hospitalizations and death. So very comparable to the mRNA vaccines. Also a two-shot system requires a prime and a boost. But the most important thing about Novavax is it doesn't have the cold storage issues Pfizer and Moderna have. So it will be something we can use very effectively in countries that don't have good refrigeration.
Yeah, I'll get back to that in a second. But just for the science, to kind of go through the science of how this works, my understanding is that the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine, and I might say this wrong, I'm pulling this off the top of my head, but the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines, is it that they are the ones that replicate the spike proteins, but this vaccine, the new Novavax vaccine, replicates the entire protein? I mean, can you talk about the science of how this works?
Well, most of these vaccines are targeted against the spike protein. The Novavax uses a little bit different cocktail, including the spike protein, and so it does have a little bit of a different target, but it has proven to be very, very effective. And it is safe. It's an inert vaccine, not something that doesn't seem to cause the clotting problems that we saw with AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, which is good news. We do have to be careful because as these vaccines increase in the number of people that are receiving them, then sometimes we do see some problems emerge. Remember, we didn't see clotting issues in the two adenovirus vaccines until we started reaching millions of doses. So there may be some unforeseen things, but this technology has been around for previous vaccines, as I've mentioned. And yes, the Novavax uses a little bit more of the virus than Moderna and Pfizer, more of the virus genetics, I should say. Remember, it's not the virus itself. So
right.
So that makes it a competitor in some respects. But the best part of it is that it seems to be very effective, highly effective. The 90% range is terrific, and is holding up against the variants as well. So all in all, a really good day in the world of vaccines. And I think we're going to see this more and more as we move through this, with more vaccines coming online that are very effective and hopefully won't require the cold storage issues that the Pfizer and Moderna do.
Now, between the Pfizer and Moderna inoculations and then Johnson & Johnson, the U.S. already has plenty of vaccine doses. So I think one of the most interesting things about the coverage to me is that Novavax itself is saying we may not even get an emergency authorization to have our vaccine distributed widely in the U.S. anytime soon, because there isn't, you know, we're not going to get an emergency approval because there is no longer an emergency. I mean, I'm curious to hear your thoughts about the possibility or perhaps the likelihood that we're not going to see this vaccine in the U.S., but that its first venue might be internationally.
Well, I think all along Novavax has targeted middle-income and lower-income countries. I think that they knew that that was going to be the area where they would probably be able to roll out most of their vaccine. And, you know, this is obviously an enormously important and mandatory thing. No one is safe on this planet until everybody is safe on the planet. And so to have a vaccine that is highly effective, that is safe, and also doesn't require extensive, elaborate storage is going to be very, very important for developing countries. And as you pointed out, Kyle, we have plenty of vaccine here. Now it's time for us to share it with the rest of the world, and President Biden is doing that in conjunction with COVAX, which is the WHO sort of central supply area, in partnership with the Europeans and the Russians and the Chinese. This is a humanitarian issue, and perhaps it is just one little teeny tiny opportunity for lots of countries to come together and do what's right for humanity.
The one blip that I think is worth maybe just highlighting the broader implication of in that Novavax clinical trial results that came out this morning are the numbers from South Africa. And I just thought it was interesting because the company found an efficacy of just 49% in its Novavax trial in South Africa. It was a smaller trial, but among the factors there was that a number of the volunteers in that trial had HIV. And I guess I'm curious to just hear more about your thoughts about the vaccines not doing well in folks who are immunocompromised, which is a trend that we've seen with other shots as well. I mean, can you sort of talk through why vaccines don't work as well in folks who have poor immune systems?
Well, because the whole point of a vaccine is to stimulate the immune system. The vaccine is not a medication. You're not giving a medication to fight the virus. You're training the immune system to, when it encounters a coronavirus or any virus for a vaccine, it knows what to do. It mobilizes not only the antibodies, which are the little molecules that glomp onto the virus and destroy it, but more importantly, T lymphocytes and B cells, and those are an integral part of the immune system. And that's the part that people with all kinds of immune suppressive disorders, whether it's HIV or multiple myeloma or CLL or other kinds of cancers, or people who take very strong immunosuppressive agents, their T and B cells are a little on the rickety side, and so they're not as robust in terms of attacking virus. I will say that well-controlled HIV patients, they have very high-functioning immune systems and can do very well with these vaccines. And we certainly want immunocompromised people to get vaccinated. Mm. It won't hurt them. It may well help them. They may have a response. The studies with the Delta variant, the formerly 351 South Africa variant, were probably done on patients that had poorly controlled HIV. So they were still having HIV virus circulate, and that was suppressing their immune system even more. So that I agree with Novavax's estimate that that may be an underestimate of its ability to fight off this particular virus in normal hosts.
In general, what does the future hold for immunocompromised folks? I mean, we're going to talk in just a minute here on the show about California's sort of big economic reopening and all of the rules that are loosening. But I would imagine that if you're, you know, sitting in a position of someone who does have a suppressed immune system, that you might be thinking, well, those precautions protected me, and maybe that it's going to be a much more, I mean, are they facing a much more lonely battle in maintaining some safety against the virus because the vaccine doesn't work as well for them and their shield is a little bit more penetrable?
Well, I think that I hope not, because, you know, most patients that have an immunocompromising disorder, I would think, pay attention to washing their hands, to not being around sick people, to trying to protect themselves. You know, this was going on prior to the emergence of COVID-19.
Right.
So I think that's prudent on the part of people who have underlying disorders, and some of them can be, you know, end-stage renal disease, or on dialysis, or you have diabetes, very common things that can affect the immune system. But they need to, you know, they themselves need to pay attention to protecting themselves, and we as a society need to protect them. So, you know, if you are a normal, healthy person, but you have an upper respiratory infection, you have a cold, or you have influenza, don't go to work. This is a time when people really have to take responsibility not only for themselves, but also for the people that are compromised around them. And we can protect them and be a very effective way of doing that by continuing to say, hey, if I want to wear a mask because I'm immunocompromised, I'm going to wear a mask and not to get chastised for that. I'm not immunocompromised, but I'm going to be wearing a mask a lot of the time because I'm
nervous.
You know, we're not out of this, Kyle, and we've really got to pay attention to what's going to happen over the summer and especially in the fall. It's very common for these viruses to have a resurgence during that time. So that will be the final test of the power of the vaccines. And, of course, finally, with herd immunity, that's the whole point of herd immunity, is to protect those individuals who either choose not to get vaccinated or to protect those individuals who don't respond to the vaccine because you've tamped down the virus so much that the likelihood they'll encounter it is very low.
Dr. Kimberly Schreiner, infectious disease specialist at Huntington Hospital in Pasadena, is talking through the latest COVID-19 news with us. And if you have a question for her, you can drop it on the AirTalk page at kpcc.org. The New York Times, Dr. Schreiner, this morning has its newsletter out talking about COVID-19 case rates that are basically no longer falling. Back in, if you just look at the chart, if you can picture it, there's sort of a peak in kind of mid-April where there were something like 60, 70,000 new cases a day. And then there was just sort of a precipitous decline until the beginning of about this month where things appear to have leveled off. And the conclusion is that the rate of daily new cases is no longer falling, now at about 14,000 cases per day. What do you think is going on here?
Well, a couple things, Kyle. The first is that more people are being vaccinated. That's the biggest, probably significant change. More people are being vaccinated and are fully vaccinated. The vaccine is very effective, and it's creating a barrier for virus transmission. Virus goes to, you know, Bob, who's been vaccinated, can't get in, goes over to Fred, who wasn't vaccinated, and the virus takes Fred, you know, makes Fred sick. So it's that simple. The vaccines are providing an enormously important barrier. In addition, unfortunately, many, many hundreds of thousands of Americans had COVID, some of which had severe COVID, many of whom died, as we know.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a certain layer of natural immunity. We do know that natural immunity begins to wane after about, maybe 4 to 5, 6 months or so. And so that's why we do recommend that if you've had COVID, you should get at least one vaccine to really ramp up your protection. And finally, the efficacy of masking and social distancing and so forth. As we remove those protective measures, we are going to see probably some little blips here and there. It's not uncommon for these type of pandemic viruses to then kind of settle down into some sort of what we call endemic viruses, where they just kind of hang out. They may appear in little blips during certain times of the year when people get back together again, like the winter. And that's why I said the fall and the winter next year will be the real test of how well we've been able to control this. But it's very good news, and I'm very optimistic, and we hope that we can continue. But people need to get vaccinated. That's the best tool.
I mean, is the issue, I mean, could we push that number down further? If the decline has plateaued at, you know, about 14,000 new cases a day, is the key more, is it more vaccination? Presumptuously, that's the word, removing the restrictions here in California, perhaps. Are variants maybe potentially like pushing, you know, there's maybe some upward pressure on that line. How do those factors all play into that sort of plateau that we're seeing in the numbers?
Well, you're absolutely right about all of those things. We certainly know that the variants can emerge, that they are stronger versions of the virus, that they're being selected for in the presence of the vaccines. That creates a special pressure on the virus to want to change its appearance, if you will, so that it can attack people again. So that's a very big concern. There's no question that increasing vaccination would help bring that down even further, that the more people that are vaccinated, that's just the less place for the virus to go. And again, the virus is going to look for non-vaccinated, non-immune people. People get natural immunity. That also will continue to drive it down a little bit. And as I said, it's not uncommon for these viruses just to kind of become sort of a chronic sort of thing. And they often can become a chronic, less nasty virus. That certainly has happened over decades with things like alpha coronaviruses, which are a little different than this one. But this is such a nasty player. We just have to be very, very vigilant. With regard to opening things up, I think we do have to dip our toe in the water. I'm nervous myself personally, but I understand that we have to follow the science. The LA County Health Department, Barbara Ferrer, has been very, very cautious and has protected hundreds of thousands of people. Lots of people owe their lives to her. So I think, and also to Dr. Goh in Pasadena. So I think that we need to follow the direction of our public health people. They think it's time to begin to open up, and we're going to have to try it. If it doesn't work, we go back in. We know what to do. We've done this before, so it's just a matter of following the pattern.
Before we go to break, a quick question from Mariana in Santa Monica. She writes, my mom is immunocompromised due to her multiple myeloma. I'm her caretaker. We're both fully vaccinated, but I'm wondering if it's possible that I can bring it to her in an asymptomatic way. How careful should I be around her?
Well, Mariana, you should be careful around her just because she does have an immunocompromising condition. With normal things, washing your hands. If you're feeling sick, don't be around her. The likelihood that you can transmit or carry SARS-CoV-2 once you've been fully vaccinated is very low. And we do know that that was a very important bit of data that came out a couple of months ago. We knew it probably was going to happen because we saw it in some of the early animal studies that were done, that vaccinated individuals don't seem to be able to carry or transmit the virus, and that's huge from both a personal standpoint when you're dealing with somebody who's compromised and also from an epidemiologic standpoint.
Dr. Kimberly Schreiner is an infectious disease specialist at Huntington Hospital in Pasadena. She's agreed to stand by with us as we move into our next segment after a quick break here on Air Talk. We're going to talk about what's reopening in California starting tomorrow. Back after a quick break. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC and streaming at kpcc.org. Kyle Stokes in for Larry Mantle. Up on the show in about 20 minutes, we're going to open the phones and hear your memories of your favorite community gathering places that didn't make it through the pandemic. So yes, restaurants, a lot of restaurants that didn't make it through that we're going to miss, but also your favorite neighborhood coffee shop, your neighborhood bar. We're going to memorialize it all. Theaters, museums. We want to get a picture from all across Southern California of those places that did not make it through. But sticking with the sort of big news that we are following here in the KPCC and LAS newsroom is after more than a year of masks and social distancing in businesses and public places, this week, California is going back to business as usual, more or less. Vaccinated Californians will be able to go mask-free in many settings starting tomorrow, June 15th. That is Governor Gavin Newsom's much-touted date for reopening the economy and ending many of the state's COVID-19 pandemic restrictions. That said, there are going to be some places where you're going to still have to wear a mask for now, and there are still some fairly major unresolved questions, especially for what happens in offices and workplaces, though regulators will vote on a new slate of proposed workplace rules on Thursday. To preview what's changing tomorrow, what's not changing tomorrow, what's still up in the air, we have KPCC and LAist health reporter Jackie Fortier with us. Thanks for being here, Jackie.
Hey, Kyle.
So let's just start with a little fact check here. The state put out this official flyer that summarizes the new rules, and it basically boils down to this line. Everyday life will feel a lot like before COVID-19. Restaurants, shopping malls, movie theaters, and most everyday places will be open as normal. Jackie, you have been following the twists and turns of all these new rules very closely. Does that statement ring true to you?
Well, it kind of depends on who you are in those situations. So tomorrow, June 15th, Newsom will lift California's stay-at-home order, which will allow most businesses to reopen to full capacity and fully vaccinated people to forego masks in most situations. However, it's up to the business how much they want to enforce masking in their own business. So you could see signs that say, you know, no mask, no service. Businesses can rely on the honor system, or they can require, you know, everyone to wear masks or implement a vaccine verification system. So as a customer, I mean, you may be asked to wear a mask depending on where you go. At a movie theater, maybe not. At a salon where you're closer to people, they might ask you to mask up. So it'll really depend on the business and on each person. If you are working and you work around other people, you're probably going to continue to be masked for a little while longer.
Now, just to underscore that I'm curious about businesses that are going to be more cautious than the regulations. I mean, we've heard, you know, sort of some statements from business interest groups that they don't want to play mask police, for example. But I'd also imagine that there's some concern about being sued if for example, you got COVID-19 at someone's business. I mean, are there going to be businesses that take an even more cautious line than the state, even if the state's sort of message is we're back to normal now?
Yeah, I mean, the public health order allows businesses to do that if they want to. So they have three options. They can rely on the honor system. People can just walk into the business with or without masks. And the assumption is if you don't have a mask, you are fully vaccinated. They can require everyone to wear a mask, regardless of vaccination status. So just like I said, no masks, no service kind of thing. Or they can implement a vaccine verification system. And that's how they check. Now, we've heard from Gavin Newsom, our governor, last week. He kind of hinted at this yet to be unveiled optional system, which will undoubtedly be met by pushback from, I'm sure, anti-vaccine activists and, you know, privacy advocates. But there are some businesses who would be interested in using it. I talked to a bar owner over the weekend, and he said he would be very interested in using something like that because he wants to know that the people who are in the bar, you know, hanging out, people who, when you're drinking alcohol, you may not socially distance as much as you did before or have
get
your
a little friendly.
Yeah, exactly. He wants to know that his patrons are vaccinated, and that's something that he's more comfortable with. And as a business owner, he has that right. So it's really going to kind of be a patchwork, potentially. It'll be interesting to see how many businesses actually decide to do it, but they do have the option.
I want to actually raise that point with our infectious disease specialist who's joined us as well, Dr. Kimberly Schreiner of Huntington Hospital. And I was just reading this sort of separately, that the U.S. lacks a centralized, you know, so-called vaccine passport. And the European Union, they've put in place this sort of, kind of universal system, a digital app where you can prove that you have recently tested positive. And I mean, in the U.S., we've basically, shunned the idea of having a national vaccine database. And I'm curious, from your perspective as an infectious disease expert, do we need one?
I think it would be of great help, and not just for this virus, but for other viruses as well. Any tool that we can use to help track pandemics, and there will be other pandemics, and this pandemic, as I want to reiterate, is not over. And by the way, I just wanted to circle back. The Delta variant is the India variant. The Beta variant is the 351 South Africa variant. You can see
there you
go. Nomenclature is confusing. At any rate, I think that any tool that we have to follow disease, whether it's viral or even bacterial, is helpful. Now, I can certainly understand Americans are very protective of their privacy and their citizen and their rights and so forth. And so I think that the idea of having sort of a centralized government-controlled database is disturbing to them. But the truth is, it would probably be very handy just to have it on your phone. You can bring it up when you go through the airport, you go into a museum, you're traveling overseas. Countries are going to mandate it. The cards that we carry, the American folks that have the vaccine cards like I do, are not totally protected because they can be forged. And so these passports that the EU is creating are a little bit less likely to be to forge them. I'm sure somebody will come up with some way of doing it. But I think it would be helpful, but I can certainly understand that there's a lot of people that feel that that's an intrusion on privacy.
Yeah, I've seen people selling those cards on Amazon, actually. Not that I'm on the market for one, I should just say, but it's, you know, been sort of talked about. Jackie, to turn back to California's reopening for a second, the big kind of unresolved question, as I hinted earlier, is about these workplace guidelines about what you do in your office, which is a major sort of, I mean, you know, if you want to talk about going back to normal, that's a major consideration. And you know, sort of regulators recently tried to pass some new rules, but then they walked them back. And now the Cal OSHA board is going to vote on a new proposal on Thursday, which, by the way, is after the date that we're supposed to reopen. Can you walk us through the back and forth? What's with all of this?
Yeah, it's been complicated. I'm happy to. So the Cal OSHA board is the workplace safety agency, and they regulate workplace safety in almost all workplaces in the state of California, right? So we're talking about a workplace isn't necessarily inside. It's not always an office building. People outside, picking fruit, to people on an oil rig drilling, as well as people in office settings. Hmm. So they really regulate a very broad range of places. We've had emergency coronavirus restrictions in place since last November when they were passed by the Cal OSHA board. And that required people to wear masks. When I say people, I mean workers, to wear masks and to physically distance, regardless of their vaccination status. Of course, when they were passed, we didn't have the vaccines. So they needed to change those regulations, those emergency regulations, in order to allow people to go, loosen them up. Initially, the board voted to require people who were unvaccinated to wear masks indoors, and people who were vaccinated, if there was anyone around them whose vaccination status wasn't known, or if there was an unvaccinated person. So if one unvaccinated person walked into a room, everybody would have to mask up. Mm. Those rules were initially passed by the board. It was a 9-hour long meeting. This is why you have reporters, so that we sit through these meetings so you as a listener don't have to. And then they took a break and then decided that they were going to repeal those rules. They heard considerable pushback from business interests who didn't want to pass them, for multiple reasons. One of the big ones was that the businesses didn't want to have to supply respirators to unvaccinated people. This is 30 pages of rules, and that was one of the things in there that they really, really didn't like. So the Cal OSHA board came up with new rules. They put them out last Friday. They're much more in line with the CDC masking rules, which California will also be following on Tuesday. So the new rules would allow people indoors in any workplace, no matter what that is, if you're vaccinated, to go without a mask or without social distancing.
Even if other people are unvaccinated in the same room, that would be it. Is that, am I understanding right that that's a change?
Yes. Okay. Yes, correct. Yeah. Yeah. So it would loosen it up quite a bit.
Go ahead.
And then they will vote on Thursday. And then there is a 10-day administrative law review that has to happen. So they couldn't really go into place until June 28th. So that's kind of the big point right now. We're still going to have these very strict masking and distancing rules, even when the state opens up tomorrow.
Unless the governor steps in and issues an executive order. Is there any, and that's something that business interests, the sort of Chamber of Commerce types, have been pushing for. Is there any indication that Newsom is going to go to that length?
Yeah, you're right. The business interests have been pushing for it, but especially, again, because they didn't want to pay to give people respirators. And when I say respirators, I'm talking about like N95 masks. They would have had to have provided them under the rules. Hmm. Interestingly, they also will have to provide them under these rules that are up for debate on the Thursday meeting. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But other than that, it's pretty much what the business interests were asking for. Last Friday, Newsom kind of hinted around at the press conference that they were going to somehow fast track this 10-day administrative law period, He was very confident that the Kalosha board will pass these new rules on Thursday. I don't know how exactly they're going to fast track it, or if he's just going to wait for the board to vote and then maybe issue an executive order, because since we're still in the state of emergency, he has that power to just overrule the board with an executive order. But he did say he wanted to wait for the board to vote.
Dr. Schreiner, I'm wondering if you have thoughts on these new workplace guidelines. It does seem to be the major fly in the ointment to the idea of that the economy is open right away. It's sort of a debatable proposition if you know, you're still, you know, there are still some restrictions on what a lot of Californians have to do in their workplaces. Do you think that solution that has been reached, apparently vaccinated folks don't have to wear masks under almost any circumstance at work, is that a reasonable resting place for this debate, or is more caution warranted?
Well, I think you can. It's just and Jackie did a great review of that. I think that it just speaks to the complexity of this problem, and I think it's time to take the training wheels off. I think we do have to kind of go ahead and take that step. This will be the test. Again, this is a second test for the power of the vaccines. We know they protect people when they're exposed to SARS-CoV-2. If we start seeing an uptick in disease, or if we start seeing the emergence of new or some of the pre-existing variants, it's always about the variants, it seems, then that will be a lesson that we have to dial it back a little bit. And that did sort of happen a bit in England recently with the emergence of the Delta variant in England. So I think that this is the test. This will be the tried and true. We know the science of the vaccines. It's like I said, it's time to maybe go ahead and do it. You know, the tragedy that's happened to the businesses, I know your next segment you're going to talk about this, is also a very, very important factor and a consequence of this pandemic. And so it's a balance between, sort of protecting the public virologically, but also protecting the communities economically.
Jackie, in the time we have left, I want to do kind of a lightning round here of different events different areas of life what are going to be the rules in these areas? So for the first thing is that the state has put out some guidance around so-called mega events. And I'm curious if you can just sort of walk us through what those restrictions are, because those are one of the things that are not changing tomorrow for sure.
Meaning anything that draws more than 5,000 people indoors or 10,000 people outside will only be open to people who can prove that they've either been vaccinated or that they tested negative for the coronavirus in the last 72 hours. That kind of proof won't necessarily be required at an outdoor event like a baseball game, but the state is recommending that stadiums either impose a rule like that or require masking. So big events, you'll need to prove you're vaccinated.
What about situations like public transit or being in airports? Maybe those are two different questions, Jackie. What are the rules that are going to apply to that in that context?
Public transit, anyone will still need to wear a mask regardless of your vaccination status. Planes are regulated by the federal government into September, I believe, that there's still going to be a requirement for masking on planes. And then it's up to the feds if they'll continue it past that point.
I know as an education reporter that masks are still going to be required in K-12 schools and mm-hmm. childcare centers. We got a question from Sabrina on Twitter, who's wondering if karaoke is going to be open.
I actually got that question too from somebody else. Karaoke will be open. I had to go and look through the regulations, but yes, it will be.
Wow, perfect. Are you going to be there? Like, do you have a go-to song?
No, I don't.
Let me just make sure. And are there any local governments that are thinking of taking stronger restrictions as is an option under the reopening, the so-called reopening framework? A county could be more strict. Yeah.
Yeah, that's allowed, but none of them have said they will, including LA County. I mean, there are three counties that are still in the red tier. I looked them up this morning. Shasta, Yuba, and Del Norte are all still in the red tier. And all of those restrictions are going to go away tomorrow. I mean, there are still people getting sick every day. There's still people dying from COVID-19 every day. And the vaccinations are going well, you know, overall in California, but in the poorer areas of the state, you know, there are fewer people vaccinated. So And when I mean, you know, including a lot of urban areas, it's still a patchwork of vaccination. So we really need to still get a lot more people vaccinated in order to feel safe, especially going into the cold and flu season.
We've got a very busy newsroom of folks covering this story, but none busier than KPCC and LAist health reporter Jackie Fortier, who is so gracious to give us some time and join us and walk us through the reopening tomorrow. Jackie, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And Dr. Kimberly Schreiner joined us as well, a medical doctor and infectious disease specialist at Huntington Hospital in Pasadena. Dr. Schreiner, thanks as always for your time. We are coming back in just a few minutes with a discussion of all of the places that we have lost during this pandemic that you would like to remember, your favorite restaurant, your favorite coffee shop. We open the phones and give you a chance to pour one out for your favorite places next.
The LAist Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at LAist.com/sweeps.